and 1,500 emergency places for illegal immigrants. In the last 7 years, the number of asylum seekers has nearly doubled in France. Italy has dealt with much of the migrant influx, with Foreign Minister Paolo Gentiloni saying European solidarity is the only answer.
Europe has to show that it can come together, that it has the ability to respond to this extreme situation, which has been in the making for 2 years now.
European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker broke off high-level bailout talks with Greek officials on Sunday. Negotiations over the weekend failed to deliver progress.
Hello, if you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
This is APNS Public Radio.
The opinions expressed in dispatches represent the analysis of the participating editors and may not necessarily reflect the group positions of the ANG or its public news wires.
Hey, this is Vagabond producer, writer, and director Machetero. You're listening to The Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back. There's a lot going on, and I don't even know where to begin, but I want to focus right now on the question of terrorism and the shooting at the AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. Now, I've been pretty candid about this. You know, I'm Gullah, so the AME is my family church. You dig? So I take this person. As far as I'm concerned, this was an attack on the Gullah Nation. The Gullah people are bleeding. We're forgiving these bastards, but we're bleeding. And, you know, the strength of my people, I believe, is pretty much, you know, displayed in that courtroom. And they told that murderous son of a bitch that they forgave him. You see, you know, and that's, I believe, says a lot about my people as Gullah people and my people as Africans, that, you know, through everything that has gone on from slavery through Crispus Attucks, through Paul Cuffey, right, the early people, you know, Frederick Douglass, and then we start getting into, you know, the real thing with Denmark Vesey and Gullah Jack and Nat Turner. You know, we have worked with you, for you, for free, for, you know, less wages than everyone else. Dig what I'm saying? You know, we have jumped in front of bullets for you. We have taken, you know, everything. You know, World War One, World War Two. You know, the war against England, the war against Canada. You know, because I know you forget that you invaded Canada twice. You know, when you went after Mexico, when you went after Puerto Rico, we were there. When you went after, you know, the Philippines, we were there with you. And, you know, it doesn't seem to matter, you know, what we do. You know, we save your lives, we raise your children, we listen to your fucking stories, we bury you, you know, we drive you to fuck around. You know, it's like nothing is good enough. So here this comes, this Dylan Wolf, who, Roof, actually, who was trained pretty much by the conservative citizens councils, you know, the John Birch Society, all the people out there claiming that there's a white genocide going on. Right. You know, it's crazy. But, you know, again, that's the background. He's been on before, Shivai Bunker. He's coming out of Washington, D.C. You can see him on Twitter. You can converse with him on Twitter. You can praise him on Twitter as selfmade_G22. You can check out his work at dreamchaser.com. And, you know, when we were on the show before, we were talking about his support of capitalism and my support of not capitalism. Dig what I'm saying? but we're two Africans, you know, and we can understand that we're Africans. And, you know, we don't have to have what you saw Dylann Roof doing, you see. Two intelligent, civilized black men can converse, can talk. We don't have to, you know, shoot from the hip. We can shoot from the lip. We don't have to get the way white people are acting. We have a police union head here in the United States. I'm going to pull up his information here in a bit. But he is telling the protesters who say that that Black Lives Matter, that he's had enough. We had the police union head in New York City say that his police is at war with the protesters. Black Lives Matter, he said, we are at war with you. We have another police union saying, union leader saying, we are at war with you. And basically asked the white citizens of his district to support them in the upcoming war against those of us who believe that because we're African, we have a right to walk the street, that we have a right to demand that the Constitution recognize us as well, that we have a right to demand our human rights, that we have a right to a piece of this country. And here's where the question of terrorism comes in, because we have a case of Dylann Roof go in and shoot 8 elders and a young African brother who tried to talk to him, tried to reason with him, and was shot down in cold blood. We have a state senator. He wasn't just the minister of that church. He wasn't just the pastor at that church. This was a state senator. And he tells the police, Dylann Roof, that he intended to start a race war. But this is not an act of terrorism. James Comey, the head of the FBI, says that this is not an act of terrorism, that this does not fall within the definition of an act of terrorism. But why we have Brother Bunker on today is because he reminded me of a story that I forgot. We reported on it, but I totally forgot it. Floyd Calkins II. You forgot it as well, brother and sister. You know you did. He's the brother who went and shot up the Family Research Council, the FRC, the conservative lobbying group, you know, the Duggar family, Josh Duggar, you know, the Duggar family, the pedophile family, you know, they're connected to this. Well, he didn't kill anybody. You know, he did, you know, shoot and injure one of the security people, but he didn't kill anyone. And he was charged with terrorism. And he's doing 25 years. P. Diddy, not somebody I particularly give a fuck about, but he's in the news. It turns out that his boy plays for UCLA. And Diddy got into some words with the coach. Supposedly he hit him with a kettlebell. But I'm hearing that nobody was injured. I don't know how you could hit anyone with a kettlebell and no one is injured. I don't know how that works. But he's been charged with making terrorist threats. You kind of get where I'm coming from with this? So let's get where Brother Gervais is coming with this. Brother Bunker, welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me back on here, man. I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while, man. Yeah, I really wanted to hear from you, brother. I've been looking at what you've been saying, and you pulled my coat to something that I completely forgot about. Mr. Floyd Calkins II. Runs into the Family Research Council and shoots it up with a bag full of Chick-fil-A.
15 Chick-fil-A sandwiches was what he had in the bag. And of course, he had a gun, and he had come to actually shoot up the place because of their opposition to legalizing gay marriage. And, you know, and Chick-fil-A having stood for the institution of marriage as we know it, or as they portray it, you know, he was trying to make a point by getting their sandwiches, and he planned on smearing all the sandwiches on the faces of everybody that he would have killed. But the point is, at the end of the day, he still didn't kill anyone. He shot and injured a security guard, and that was about all the damage he done. Okay? But yet the government had no problem charging him with terrorism. Now I like to start it from the top and take it from the FBI website and get their definition of terrorism, because that is, I believe, is germane to the discussion that we're having. If we're going to talk about terrorism, we need to get a clear understanding of what it is that they call terrorism. Now, according to the U.S. Code 18, U.S.C. and 2331 defines international terrorism and domestic terrorism for purposes of Chapter 113B of the Code entitled Terrorism. Now, when it comes to domestic terrorism, the FBI defined domestic terrorism as activities with the following three characteristics. It involves acts dangerous to human life that violate federal or state law, appear intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population, to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion, or to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping, and occur primarily within the territorial jurisdiction of the United States. That's domestic terrorism. If nothing else, Dylan Roof is a domestic terrorist. Okay? By the very definition posted on the FBI website, what they call terrorism is exactly what this man has done. And not only did he just kill 9 people in cold blood, he actually took the time to get up and tell them verbatim, "I came to kill black people." And what actually pained me the most when I heard this story, when the survivors started talking about it, they talk about a young man who walks into a church where there were about 10 people. Now, there were about 12 people in there, okay? All of them black. And here comes this lone white kid into the church. And guess what they did? They welcomed him with open arms. They brought him around them. They pray with him. Imagine that. They pray with him. From his own words, he says he almost didn't go through with it.
That's right.
Because everyone was so nice to him. I mean, what is it going to take for these people to realize that evil is not born? It's something that you teach people. You teach racism. Nobody is born racist. You have to teach, you have to ingrain something like that into somebody's mind. For you to come into a place of peace and worship and have the heart to sit with them for about an hour as they pray the Lord. Like this to me was amazing. I mean, if he just walked in there and started shooting, it'd be a completely different, you know, situation. But when you talk about someone that took the time to walk in there and sit with them and go through prayers as they read the Bible, they talk about the word of God and love and everything else, and then yet you still have the strength to get up and say, "All right, y'all, I came to kill black people tonight." Because you rape our women, and you're taking over our country, and you have to go. And when you listen to that, right? When you listen to a speech like that, how in good faith as an organization that claims to protect the lives of all American citizens, the FBI, how can you get up there, James Comey, and tell us this is not an act of terrorism? How would you react if a Muslim man walked into a white church and sat with them for an hour to pray and then get up and say, "Allahu Akbar," and blew himself up? Guess what? He's a terrorist. Right? Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they do, right? He's a terrorist. Fair and square. And for the next week or 2 weeks, they're going to be preparing an assault on somebody's country to avenge the lives of those he killed. Because that's what we do, right? We wait for white lives to be taken, and then we use that as an excuse to go and invade somebody's country and destroy them. But if you continue to kill black people, as the police has been doing, as white people have been doing, guess what? It's all fair game. Because their lives don't matter. They're not actually people. I mean...
Yeah, I mean, you know, what do you say, you know, with these things? And I have to kind of go on a tangent a little bit here for a moment, because I feel that this is relevant. For those of you who remember the Buddhist monk,
yeah,
in Vietnam, I actually worked with a man who was there, not with that particular monk, but one of the others. He was a brother who did service in Vietnam, and he said he was there.
Yeah.
He said the three of them, that, you know, some others had poured gasoline on them, and they set fire to them, and we stood there and watched. There wasn't a fucking thing we could do, and they didn't make a sound. And, you know, I never really, you know, seeing the photographs of that and film of that, the archive film, and it's just to imagine that someone would go that far. And it's happened in India, where people set fire to themselves, self-immolation, to draw attention to what's happening. Well, this 79-year-old white retired United Methodist minister drove to Grand Saline, Texas, his childhood home 70 miles east of Dallas. He pulled into a strip mall parking lot, knelt down on a small piece of foam, doused himself with gasoline, and set himself on fire. The family released the suicide note, and he said it was the racism in Grand Saline and in the rest of the country that he was giving his body to be burned with love in my heart for those who were lynched in his hometown, as well as those who did the lynching, hoping to address the lingering racism. He called his death an act of protest, and felt that after a lifetime of fighting for social justice, he needed to do more. He said, and I quote, "I would much prefer to go on living and enjoy my beloved wife and grandchildren and others, but I have come to believe that only my self-immolation would get the attention of anybody and perhaps inspire some to hide service." And I have to say this because, you know, I mean, goddamn, man, you know, fucking just like, you know, how sick has the country gotten that where you get a decent white person who figures that in order to get attention to what we saw in Charleston, in order to draw attention to the murder of Walter Scott, in order to draw attention to that brother who died in the back, who suffocated in the back of a squad car, that he set fire to himself. And while we have other white people who are out here wishing for our destruction, wishing for our death. And then we have a lot of brothers and sisters that are so caught up in the anger, man, right?
Yeah.
That they can't even realize that there are white people who do give a fuck about us.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And they're hamstrung because their own fucking people are crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to cut you off, but I mean, I actually have a better story for you about self-immolation. I remember the story of Mohamed Bouazizi. You look him up on online. He is a Tunisian man who actually sparked this entire Arab Spring revolution. He's the man behind the revolution that saw the tumbling of several great empires in Africa from 2009. Mohamed Bouazizi doused gasoline on himself and set himself on fire in Tunisia, back in 2009. And that particular gesture sparked the revolution in Tunisia that saw Zine Ben Ali get ousted. Next, they moved to Egypt. And then next it was Libya and then Syria. All of those things started because of the action of one man. One man who was sick and tired. Mohamed Bouazizi was a poor merchant who sold fruits and vegetables on a small carriage. And the police kept fucking with him. They would come and take all his merchandise because he wouldn't pay the equivalent of $7 in fines that he already accumulated. And he was 26 years old and had a family to feed. And they kept fucking with him. And one day they took his shit and said, "You're not getting it back." And he went to the police station, they spat on him and kicked him out. He was tired. He was angry. So he went home, got some gasoline, came back in front of that police station, set himself on fire. And the week after, riots erupted in all of Tunisia. The president came to see him as he was dying on his bed. Eventually, he passed away. But the damage had already been done. Next thing you know, Ben Ali was getting kicked out of the country. He flew out on a private jet and went to seek asylum in another country. And right after that, the movement moved on to Egypt, where they kicked out, the Egyptian president. Next thing you know, they moved on to Libya. Those were significant moments. So when you see that, and I always remember one of Richard Pryor's stand-up, the one he did in 1977 in Cali, and he was talking about that same month you referred to in Vietnam, and he was saying, man, his boy was saying, "Hey, man, I mean, that's a lot of courage, man." And Richard Pryor said, "Fuck courage. That motherfucker didn't flinch." You know what I'm saying? That's what it means. But I'm not. See, it shows you, you know, how completely removed from reality a lot of people are. And when you go online, because we have this completely ridiculous form, you know, which in itself is a good and a bad thing. What we call social media. Everybody has an opinion about something. Everybody wants to say whatever they feel like. But what really gets me is our brothers and sisters, the people that call themselves quote unquote black Republicans, black conservatives. These people who, without the blood, sweat, and tears of people that came before them, they wouldn't even have the opportunity to stand up today and say whatever they want to say. And they forget all of that. And all you hear from them is, "You people complain too much. You people are always trying to get somebody fired. You people are always complaining about the police. You people are always, they always try to side with the oppressor." And this is something that Malcolm X gladly said, and he repeatedly warned us about, be careful, because the media would have you looking at the oppressor thinking he's the oppressed. And that's exactly what these people are doing. You tune into Fox News, all they're doing is talking about how white people are being vindicated. Everybody's blaming white people for everything wrong. But at the same time, they're turning around and blame black people for everything that's wrong in America.
Okay, so the terrorism issue. To go back to that, at least for a moment, how is it that it's easy to hit somebody like P. Diddy, who everybody knows is not a fucking terrorist?
Right.
With charge him with making terrorist threats, and you can kind of see it with the Floyd Corkin, you know, who ran into the Family Research Council. Even though we don't agree with them, you don't go in and shoot at people, man. You don't go in there with sandwiches, you know, despite what the fuck you think about them, and go in there to take people out. That's a given. Yeah. You know, that's not even anything really that needs discussion. But it's, you know, how do you not charge Dylann Roof or any other white man that does these sorts of things with terrorism? And this is coming from the FBI. And then you got the Washington Post, several articles on why Dylann Roof is not a terrorist. And then we look at somebody like Larry Elder. We look at somebody like on Twitter, DHiggins63. We look at Wayne Dupree on Twitter, Wayne Dupree Show, Black Republican. You know, we look at all of these people. I mean, even Ben Carson now, who really wants to be president bad, who has been denying racism in the GOP since we've been hearing about him, who has accused President Obama of racism. And the NAACP of racism, and the Baltimore protesters and Ferguson protesters of racism. Now, all of a sudden, he wants to be seen as a civil rights leader. When we think about Black Republicans, what are we really to think about Black Republicans?
I mean, my theory has always been, I have absolutely no problem with whatever affiliation you choose to, you know, to associate yourself with. That's not my business. You know, some people become Republican for a reason, others become Democrat for a reason. I really don't care. But the reality is, when we're dealing with actual facts, when we're dealing with something that is so poignant, that is so blatant, that everybody's seen, yet you come up and you want to show that, no, you're not the typical Black guy. I'm just going to side with you all because these other Black guys are crazy. I ain't crazy. I'm the good guy. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the attitude that a lot of these jokers are taking. Because they have no problem, you know, siding with the oppressor when it's against us. I mean, you just roll back. All you have to do is roll back a couple weeks ago. When we were talking about those young kids at a pool in Texas, you know, you had a lot of Black people jumping on Twitter talking about, yeah, these kids, they had no business being there in the first place, blah, 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 blah. And I'm sitting here like, how do you know they had no business being in there? And I got into, you know, a heated debate with one of the guys, and he was making a point that the officer, that particular officer, was well within his right to do whatever he did. And I'm telling him that there were 11 other officers on the scene who did the right thing, and not a single one of them was suspended. So how do you go and explain the behavior of one crazy retard compared to the rest of the others? Because they're all from the same department, and 12 officers showed up, and this fucking idiot is jumping around like fucking what's his name from Police Academy, you know, just rolling all over the place and snatching people. And why? And you have his own police chief going out and saying this guy was crazy, and then you turn around and try to defend him. And then you come back with this guy, okay? There's so and almost inevitably, when these things happen, when a white person goes in and shoots a bunch of people, it's the exact same fucking thing every single time. The media will talk about how sweet a kid it was, how completely innocent he was, and how he just lost his way. But you flip that coin and the killer is Black. Like, we remember just a couple of years ago, Christopher Dorner, that ex-cop from L.A. who was going on a rant trying to kill all these crooked cops within the department.
Guess what? He wasn't just an ex-cop. He was ex-Navy Special Warfare.
Yeah.
His ex-SEAL. Okay.
And see how quickly the entire media, you know, orchestrated this complete bullshit about him being a terrorist, and they stormed him and burned him alive on live TV, and they were celebrated for it. Okay? That's the thing. And when you turn around and look at Trayvon Martin, this terrorist, Dylan Roof, he mentioned Trayvon Martin. And to this day, I still have black people, black Republicans / black conservatives on Twitter going after me, talking about, yeah, if you guys didn't politicize that whole incident, then, you know, people like Ruth wouldn't have had anything to talk about. I said, how the fuck do you know that? You don't know what motivates a racist. They're racist for a reason. They don't need any actual motivation to hate you. They hate you for what you look like. Okay? And you can't tell me that we as a people, we as a nation, we as human beings should have been okay with the fact that George Zimmerman shot and killed an innocent young man who was just going home to watch the NBA All-Star game, and the police took his word for it and sent him home. And we should be just, okay, I guess he was right. That's a good thing. I mean, the kid attacked him and he shot him. We should be okay with that? In what society? Where do we live? You can't. I mean, in French law, if you murder somebody, they don't care whether you did in self-defense or they had whatever the case was. You're going to jail. You're going to be charged with murder, and you have to defend yourself and prove that you did it to save your life. You don't just take it as a given. Yeah, or you killed him in self-defense. That's what he says, so I guess we'll just believe him. And that rhetoric is valid when the killer is white or non-black. But if the killer is black, oh, you're going to jail. I don't care what the fuck you say. You're going to jail. And this is what we continuously see. And that starts in the media. Every single time, you will have it. And it never fails. It never fails. You go back throughout in the last, especially after Obama came into office, you go back and study every single case that involved a black man being shot either by police or a white person. Hell, Michael Dunn shot Jordan Davis at a gas station, and they had to do two trials to convict him of the murder of Jordan Davis. The first trial convicted him of attempted murder of the other three friends, the one he didn't kill. And they couldn't reach a verdict on the one he actually did kill. They had to go back and do a retrial for that. I mean, think about it. Think about a black person going into a gas station in Nashville, and these white kids that just come from college and they're blasting country music. He get out the car and start blasting them because he felt threatened.
Yeah.
I mean, he still be hanging right now. And that's the thing that gets me. And when us as people, we stand up and say, that's not right. You got other fucking black people saying, you motherfuckers complain too much. If you just got a job, motherfucker, I got a job. All right? I got a job. I'm making money. And I have no problem with that. But I still have the right to stand up for what's right. If I see something that's not acceptable, I'm still going to stand up against it. It's not because I'm black and lazy and I don't like to work and I just want government money. I don't want no government money, but I see what's not right and I have to say something about it. It's not complaining, it's being a fucking human being. All right? And you can't negate the fact that us going through 400 years of slavery, an additional 100 years of Jim Crow, left absolutely no effect. You can't say that. You can't just say, oh, as Obama said yesterday, you just can't come in here and assume and say something like racism is over because, I mean, we had, hell, the fucking FBI. The FBI, they called Martin Luther King a communist. And today, he's their model. Everybody said, why don't you just be like Martin Luther King? They hated him back then. And they want everybody, they want all the black leaders to be like Martin Luther King. They hated him so much, they killed him. So you can't, if Martin Luther King is the apogee of black leadership, and this is what we have to go with, then what are we aspiring to? To get shot dead in the street? Is that what it is? Because this is exactly what's happening. When you see the kid, that young man, DeRay McKesson, who's been on the ground, you know, talking and fighting this war, him and Sean King, you know, they've been on a lot of these issues, you know. All they're doing is just bringing awareness to it. And look at white supremacy. They're jumping up on these guys. They had Go Home DeRay trending, you know, over the weekend on Twitter for like 3 or 4 days. Go home, DeRay. Go home. Because they don't want nobody to talk about it. They don't want nobody to talk about it. They want you to just sit down and take it. You know, it doesn't exist. There's no racism. Everything is good. You motherfuckers, you can vote. It's not like the 60s anymore. We can't hang you. You're good. You're all right. You know? And we're supposed to just sit down and say, oh, thank you for not hanging me today. Oh, I'm really glad I'm still alive.
Mr. Obama, because, you know, he has been criticized on this show. I'm very open about this. I've never bit my tongue about that. I have never supported Barack Obama, okay? I thought we could have done better than him. If we're going to pick a first black president, you know, a first genetic black president, right? Because Bill Clinton didn't really cut the mustard in terms of saying maybe, you know, I mean, that was racism in and of itself to even suggest that about Bill Clinton. But, you know, because, I mean, after the new crime bill and NAFTA and GATT, I mean, he was good for putting more niggas in jail than anybody else, you know.
Anybody else.
Since Nixon, right?
the three strike law too, man. I mean,
Minimum shit for fucking crack versus powder cocaine, and the fact that he brought racial profiling back into federal law enforcement.
Yeah,
a lot of people forget about that, and especially those who are pro Hillary.
There you go. Those are the things that nobody talks about when they talk about Bill Clinton. Everybody remembers him as the quote unquote black president. I don't know why. Maybe because he let his assistant suck his dick in the White House. That was the blackest thing you can ever do. That was really cool.
Well, and he smoked weed, remember? He smoked, but he didn't inhale.
Yeah, yeah. And
Jennifer Flowers was on the thick side, and a lot of brothers could relate to that.
Yeah.
You know? So it was little stuff like that, you know, going on the Vibe show playing sax.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, that's what got him to vote. You dig? As soon as he got in, he said, you know, but he said, I didn't vote for him. You know, he said, I am a pro-business president. So why was everybody surprised? Right? Shouldn't have been surprised. And it's the same thing with, you know, Mr. Obama. He did not say that he was going to come in and really do anything. And then, you know, the little bit that he did say turned out to be, you know, what? That he'll put on a pair of comfortable shoes and he'll march with working people. Well, he hasn't done that. They keep talking about the great race speech of 2008, which was really, let's blame the angry black people rather than the white segregationists and white power.
That to me, that's my beef with Obama. But at the same time, you know, I've never expected Obama to be a civil rights activist. You know, I always felt like he was more of a politician than anything else. I really didn't expect him to embrace some of these problems, you know, in the manner that we would expect, you know, a black leader. He was just a politician. He is a politician, you know, as far as I'm concerned. My problem is, you know, he plays into their hand, and that speaks of white supremacy itself. You know, he has to come out politically correct every single time he opened his mouth about black people. He has to bash us when we do something wrong. But at the same time, when a terrorist like this one goes out and do what he did, you know, you're not going to see Obama come out and say, yeah, this guy's a terrorist. You know, he came out to talk about gun violence and all this other nonsense. And I'm sitting here like, okay, this thing was much about gun violence in the same way, you know, lynching was about ropes and kerosene, you know, because if you want to sit here and not look at the actual fact of a grown man, this was not a sweet kid. He was a grown man, a grown racist man who stood up there and told them, you know, explicitly that he had come to kill black people. That there in itself is cause for a sitting president to get up there and say, this is terrorism and we will not accept that in this country. That's what I was expecting him to say. I don't care if he's black, white, whatever. Obama, as the great, Dr. Michael F. Dyson has always say, every president before Obama has had to deal with racism and race in America. Every single one of them. Obama ain't no different. Mm-hmm. He ain't no different. All right? From George Washington all the way up to this guy, they all have had to deal with racism. And you can't not talk about it, you know, as a president. And that's my thing, and that's my problem. You know, when he gets up there, and it's amazing because his lack of, you know, of his lack of leadership when it comes to those problems has been criticized by white people because they hate him. For saying that if he had a kid, he would look like Trayvon Martin. And to this day, they still hate him for that. And that to me was the most innocuous thing he could have said about the whole situation. Because, you know, the fact was still that, you know, a grown man hunted down a kid and killed him. Alright? To me, it speaks more of white supremacy than anything else. That's how powerful that thing is. It's something that is so powerful that you can't have a sitting president of the United States get up there and say, this was an act of terrorism. Because that's what it was. You know, at the very least, get up there and say, this was a racist act. Because he said, I'm not saying that me, Barack Obama, I'm not saying that it was a racist act. Dylann Roof said it was a racist act. He said he came to kill black people. That in itself is racist. He's 21 years old. Okay? I want a president to be able to go up there and say it. And you don't have to be white or black to say that. I mean, and on Sunday, I was watching, I happened to be watching CNN for the first time in, like, I can't remember how long, and I saw they were showing Hillary Clinton talking about white supremacy. And I'm sitting there like, she can talk about white supremacy, why can't Obama? He's a sitting president, he can get up there and talk about it. Because that is the issue. That is the issue. This kid was a white supremacist. And you have to acknowledge that. And the more you keep sweeping that fucking problem under the rug, like, oh no, he's just a deranged kid. We need to get him a psychiatrist. This is all, nah, something just went wrong. It was a good kid gone bad. You know, it is always that with white kids. When they commit all these terrorist acts, it's always the same thing. He was deranged. Something was wrong with him, but he was such a sweet kid. And they were always, in the media, they were always going to find an uncle, a cousin, friends, you know, that would come on there and say, yeah, I mean, I've known him since he was a little toddler, and he was such a sweet kid, soft-spoken. He would never raise his voice. He's an amazing kid, you know? I mean, You remember the Boston Bombers, all right? They have several of their friends. They're locked up right now. Okay? They're friends. They were arrested for knowing shit and not telling the police. And then you have this guy, all his little buddies are coming out talking about, yeah, he told us he's been planning this shit for 6 months. No shit! And you didn't think maybe you should call the cops, you should tell someone? And you have the nerve to get on TV and say, yeah, I mean, he talked, they had this, did you see, there was a Vine, you know, about 30 second Vine with one of his friends, who's a black kid actually, and he's on there, he's talking about, yeah, I mean, he told me, actually he wasn't even planning on shooting up a church, he was planning on shooting up the University of South Carolina. Yeah, that's what the guy is saying. And I'm sitting here like, are you fucking kidding me? He told you he was going to kill people? And how many times does this shit have to happen? I mean, you look at the history, all these other fucking guys, James Holmes, Adam Lanza, the kid at in Connecticut. This other guy in Phoenix. All those idiots, they told people. And how come they're not in jail, the people they told, and did nothing? How come they're not accessory to murder?
I'm going to tell you, man. Fucking, there were four cops that were murdered, not in Seattle, actually, but not too far from a military base in the state, in Washington State. And they shut the whole city down. Black men were being stopped with military grade weapons by police on the street. They were going through everybody's bags because they didn't have a real description. They're just black guy with a beard, right? Mm-hmm. But cats that were black but didn't have a beard and didn't fit the age group and, you know, all of that, they were stopped anyway. And it was really bad for a while. They ran up on his whole family, the children, his sisters, his aunts, I mean, all of his extended family, everybody that he ever knew, right? And it turned out that he was like one of these religious nuts, man. I need to correct myself. He seriously had mental problems. He was under psychiatric care for several years due to his time in prison. He was from Gary, Indiana.
Right.
And anybody that knows Gary, Indiana, I mean, you know, most people just think in terms of the Jackson 5,
Jackson,
you know.
Yeah, Jackson, yeah.
But they don't realize how bad Gary, Indiana is and how long it's been like that. Yeah. It's like a third world country. And, you know, he got into trouble. It's like it's easy to get into trouble. And he did two long stretches.
Right.
And it drove him insane. Because I believe they kept him in solitary a lot of that time. And I believe he was sexually assaulted while he was in there. Because mm-hmm. he went in at a young age. So, you know, his mind was wrong. And at some point before he got into the shooting, it turned out that he had traveled to New York City. Because when he was released from prison, on his last bid, he got himself together. He not only found work, but he became a property owner. And he had renters. So he was going okay, but what his family said was he started to lose it again. He was starting to lose his grip on reality. And he traveled to New York City for a religious conference, and when he went to the registration desk, he was filmed telling the registrar that his name was Jesus Christ.
Right.
He identified himself.
That's a big flag right there.
Yeah, so he was already, that tells you that he wasn't together.
Yeah. And the minute he says that's a cue right there.
You know, and when the thing happened in Washington State, you know, when he came back, I think it was maybe like a year later or so. I don't remember all of the details, but they were just beginning their day in a Starbucks. They had just opened their notebook computers and were having their breakfast stuff to get ready to start their work day. And he came in. Kind of like stood there as if he was waiting, you know, like reading the menu, I think. And then he just went off. And he didn't shoot anybody else. He just shot them and then he ran out. Now, when they caught up to him, if you believe the story that they gave, that he was reaching for his pistol when an officer approached the vehicle that he was in. And this officer was a rookie. And he just about emptied his service weapon into this cat. So, you know, he wasn't going to see a judge. You understand right. what I'm saying? There was no way he was going to see a judge after, you know, murdering four police officers. That yeah. just wasn't going to happen. And then there was another case in Seattle when I was there for a little while. I was part of a protest group for a little while. And there was this other nutcase that did an attack on the police, Christopher Monfort. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone remembers his name, because it was a big thing in Seattle and throughout most of the Pacific Northwest, because he was using incendiary devices against police vehicles. And he shot and killed, I believe, one police officer. So there was a manhunt for him. They were all over the place. SWAT was everywhere. And they caught up to him. And he's paralyzed now. And I really can't even find any more information about his case. But what got me about Christopher Monfort was that he was a lot like Christopher Dorner.
Mm-hmm.
Because he went to... He he had studied to be a police officer. He took the college course.
Right.
Right? And he wasn't hired in Washington State, or at least the Seattle area. What was that? Kings County. County. That he wasn't... He wasn't hired there, even though he took his training in California State. But he wasn't hired for whatever reason. I believe he tried like three times, two if not three times. Mm-hmm. So he was okay. You know, in other words, he was mixed, like Donna, right?
Yeah.
You know, like myself, really, right? You know, he was mixed, and he believed in the system.
Right.
Because Donna certainly believed in the system.
Right.
He tried to reform it.
He was actually a good man. He was actually a good man. He was a good man.
From what we can see in hindsight, you know, because we're still not really finding out what really went down and what caused him, because it was a lot like watching a fucking 24 episode,
right?
From Fox News, you know, this thing happens. You know, did one of the people shoot one, and then he shot him, and then it looked bad, so he had to haul ass. Because there's a cover-up in the LAPD, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way it was coming out, the way they were talking.
It is. It is.
And then look at how he died. He wasn't going to see a judge.
No.
You know,
no.
Amy Goodman from democracynow.org played the 911 audio, but the audio of the communications between the police agencies.
And him, yeah.
That
yeah.
was made public. Where right. they were talking about, it's going to burn.
Right.
That this is a predetermined conclusion.
Yeah.
That he's not getting out of here. So, you know, Mr. Obama mentioned or used the word nigger to make a point.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation has gone from talking about racism and its institutional history in the United States to his using nigger.
Yeah.
And then we're talking, you know, right this second. I know we're going on a tangent, folks, but roll with us here on Christopher Dorner, believed in the system. Christopher Monfort believed in the system. These are two people who were either police officers or wanted to be police officers. But what was coming out with Dorner in the manifesto that was released to the public was that he was talking about the racial corruption. Right? And then you have another situation with Christopher Monfort, where he was talking about a 15-year-old black woman who was beaten on film in her cell by two white officers. And they didn't want that evidence brought into the courtroom, that he was addressing the racial violence of the Seattle Police Department on people of color. Which is not a justification for what Dorner did or for what Monfort did. Because Monfort's still living. He's paralyzed, but he's still living. I don't know where what his legal status is. I don't know where his case is. Because they're not reporting it. Or I'm just not looking in the right place or talking to the right people. But these are black men that believed in the system. Barack Obama believes in the system. Or he believed in the system. So, you know, what is the African community, the independent African thinker, right, supposed to... say, wrap his mind around focus in terms of, do I continue to, listen to what they're saying, or do I form my own analysis in terms of loyalty to this particular system? Because here it is, Mr. Obama talks about racism for the first fucking time in his administration, the whole time he's been on the Hill, for the first goddamn time, he is actually saying something relevant about racism. That walking up and calling somebody a nigga on the street is not racism. Racism is the power. Not a word. That's just hurting somebody's goddamn feelings. It's the power behind the word. So where's, you know, I mean, now that they're focusing on his using the word, even though we've had a bunch of presidents who used it before him, Lyndon B. Johnson is on record as using it against Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Every single one of them.
Every single one of them, right? Woodrow Wilson.
They've all used the word nigger for various reasons. And I thought that whole argument that it was a complete joke. It was laughable. You know, that the same people who've been calling Obama a nigger for the last 10 years are now all of a sudden, you know, a surprise or offended that he used the word to make a point. And that speaks to a delusion that these people live in, right? Their problem is, we all know they use the word, and this is what I was telling them on Twitter yesterday, the few people that I got to interact with, you know, who brought up that point. Obama is using the word nigger, but we can't say it. Motherfucker, you say it. I know you say it at the dinner table with your kids. I know you say it when you go home to, when you go to bed with your wife. I know you say it when you're driving off in your car and I just cut you off. I know you say it. You just can't say it in front of me. And that's the problem. It's bothering you so much that you can't say it in front of me and still be physically well. That's the problem. That's what hurts them. It's because they can't say it in front of us. They can't stand in front of me and say, never.
Well, that's the whole argument of political correctness. You know, that is not a liberal term or a progressive term. That's a Republican term. The idea that I can't call you niggas, so somehow my rights are being infringed upon. I can't call you a faggot, so my rights are being infringed upon. I can't call you a spick or a chink or, you know, Jew boy or a raghead because my rights are being infringed upon. Well, you know, I mean, this conversation is going, and let's go back to Black Republicans for a moment. Now, there's a particular one on here who was given space and time to basically give a pass to any white man who wants to just basically do whatever he wants to do. Now, John McWhorter is an associate professor of English at Columbia University, which I don't know how he can be a teacher in New York City with an active Black population, and they allow him to hold the seat. John McWhorter writes articles, essays, editorials, you know, to basically make it out that Black people have been asking for way too much. We deserve all of the bad treatment we get. We have no business being in the United States unless we're an elevated Negro like him and willing to basically lick white ass. But not white ass, white racist ass in particular, because there's more credit, I suppose, if you go to the extremists. Now, he's got a piece in Time right now, and I want everybody to go look at it. It's June 22nd, this year, of course, John McWhorter. If President Obama can say it, you can too.
Yeah.
So making the argument that saying the N-word isn't the same as using it, and had the nerve to go and mention our brothers and sisters in Australia to make his point, to start off talking about the indigenous people of Australia to make his point. The people who deal with racism, you know, just as long as the native has in this goddamn country, had everything taken from them, can be killed basically on fucking sight, were killed on sight when Europeans first went there, wiped out everybody in Tasmania down there. And he had the nerve to start off with that. And this is supposed to be a Black man. And he's commenting on the podcast, and yeah, props to Marc Maron for snagging that show. You know, in the podcast world, you know, hey, Obama showed up to his show because he knew, like when he spoke to Vice.com not too long ago and to HuffPo media not too long ago, that he can go there and be able to say what he's not going to be allowed to say in the mainstream media. And when he used the quote-unquote N-word, when he said nigger, I mean, what is he not supposed to say? What is he supposed to say? The N-word? He's a black man. I mean, what the fuck? If a black man can't say nigga and fucking, you know, make a point about it, who the fuck can?
This is Radio Anglo-Indian. Anglo-Indian radio for the fourth world.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, healthcare and cleaning reproductive health was women's business and respected as such. Reclaim your healthcare choices by keeping yourself informed and sharing information with your relatives. Inform yourself about Plan B, known as the morning after pill. Plan B will protect you from becoming pregnant after a sexual assault or unprotected sex if taken within 72 hours. Make sure your local Indian Health Service facility carries Plan B. It does not require a prescription and should be provided upon request. It's your right. For more information, call your local healthcare facility. This message is brought to you by Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice. End HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination. Get information from your community health center or nursing station, or visit www.caan.ca.
Would you like to hear the lie that judges tell jurors every day?
Listen up. This matters. I'm Lewis Black, and this is the Civil Liberties Minute with ACLU attorney Bill Newman.
In a criminal case, the judge instructs the jury, you decide the facts, but you jurors must apply to those facts the law as I explain it. And if the prosecution has proven the defendant's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, then you must return a verdict of guilty. The problem with this instruction? It's not true. It's not true at all. And the judge well knows that. But most jurors don't. Jury nullification, the right of jurors to say no, to just say no to a prosecution, was central to the Bill of Rights. Indeed, Thomas Jefferson famously believed that jurors' right to nullify was central to democracy. Writing in the Champion magazine recently, criminal defense attorney Patrick Barone cautions that care must be taken when considering nullification because juries can use that authority to enhance and augment the power of the elite rather than to limit it. But, Barone continues, jury nullification can and should be a critical limitation on legislatures bent on promulgating and judges bent on enforcing ever more overreaching criminal laws. The take-home lesson here, criminal juries should know of their right to nullify because that power can constitute liberty's last defense.
The Civil Liberties Minute is made possible by the American Civil Liberties Union because freedom can't defend itself.
That splash against my hollow bones, that rocks my soul. Oh, 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 oh. Looking back over my false dreams that I once knew, wondering why my dreams never came true. Is it because I'm black? Somebody tell me, what can I do? Oh, Lord. Oh, something is holding me back. Is it because I'm black? Yeah. And in this world of no pity. I was raised in the ghettos of the city. Yeah, oh Lord. Mama, she worked so hard to earn every penny. Yeah, oh Lord. Something is holding me back. Is it because I'm black? Is it because I'm black? Oh, somebody tell me, what can I do? Will I survive or will I die? Somebody, I want to be somebody so bad. You see, I want diamond rings and things like you do. And I want to drive Cadillac cars. Oh, I want to be somebody so bad. But you keep on putting your foot on me. And somebody say one time, you can make it if you try. Oh, and some of us, we're trying so hard. We're trying so hard. I want you to know that I don't speak for myself, but I speak for y'all too right now. You see, if you have white, light brown skin, or the high yellow, you're still black. So we all got to stick together right now. This I want to say to you, my sisters and my brothers. Right on, sister. Right on, brother. Dig this. If we keep on pushing, y'all, oh, we got to make it a little bit further. We got to make it a little further. All we got to do is try, try, try. And some of us, we're trying so hard. We're trying so hard. We're trying so hard. We're trying so hard to be somebody. We're trying so hard. Although they're holding us back. And it stands to reason that they're doing us like that. You know what?
I believe it's because we're black. But hey, we can't stop now. We can't stop now. We got to keep on, keep on, keep on, keeping on. We got to keep on, keeping on. I know and I know and I know that you know that I know it ain't right. Oh, it ain't right. It ain't right. It ain't right. That they hold us, hold us, hold us back. They're holding us back. They're holding us back. I wonder.
Hey yo, what's up y'all? This is DJ Spooky, that Subliminal Kid, giving y'all a wild style shout out. You're rolling with a podcast that's licensed under the Creative Commons license. So I just want to say, check it, download it, remix it, transform it. This is all about the wild style remix. So once again, Creative Commons, y'all, DJ Spooky, wild styles in your area, subliminal minded.
Now that America has a black president, is this proof that racism is a thing of the past?
Well, I think white men were 100% of the people that wrote the Constitution, 100% of the people who signed the Declaration of Independence, 100% of the people who died at Gettysburg and Vicksburg, probably close to 100% of the people who died at Normandy. This has been a country built basically by white folks in this country who were 90% of the entire nation. I think they ought to do. They ought to defend the legitimate rights of white working class folks who are the victims of discrimination.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Media. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.
Bonjour and Osio. This is Charles Fiddler. I'm listening to Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You know, but this is somebody who doesn't think the Redskins team name is a real fucking problem. And he's, you know, turned this entire fucking thing around that Obama was wrong, and that not only was he was wrong because he's just wrong.
My brother, right? I'll tell you one thing. All of this, along with the whole brouhaha about the flag, those are tactics to equivocate. That's all they're doing. They're wasting time. They don't want to talk about the actual problem, which is white supremacy and inherent racism in America, which is very much alive in this society. That's one thing they don't want to talk about. They don't want to talk about it. I mean, I'll give you an anecdote. Whenever you want to talk about racism, there's always this other idiot that'll pop up out of nowhere and gives you a bunch of racist shit, okay, to explain why he's not a racist. And that to me speaks volume to the power of white supremacy and racism in this country. I mean, when we're talking about police brutality, we're talking about, you know, black people being constantly discriminated against, racially profiled. You know, we're talking about Khalif Browder, the young man that was arrested at 16 years old without even being charged with a crime and sent to Rikers Island, where he was raped and beaten several times, and that just committed suicide just earlier this month. You know, when they're talking about things like that, he spent 3 years in jail at Rikers Island without a trial. Those are things that people are talking about. But they don't want to talk about that. When this fucking guy comes out, this terrorist comes out and murder 9 people, the first thing they want to do is get as far away from it as possible. Let's switch something. Let's come up with something real fast so we don't have to constantly talk about it. If a Muslim man had walked into a white church, a Catholic church, and murdered 7 people or 9 people, I guarantee you we would be invading another country today. And that's the power of whiteness. That's what we're talking about. That's what we want the discussion to be about. They're talking about the flag. I don't give a fuck about the flag, man, to be honest with you. I know they're racist. They've been racist ever since they came to this country. That's what they are. I don't need you to show the flag to know that you're racist. When you say something, even at work, even around, as in school, the minute he opens his mouth to say something, you already know what his line of thinking is. That's just how it is. But they don't want to talk about this problem. So they'll do what? They'll equivocate. They'll start jumping from one subject to another. Hey, let's talk about, hey, Obama just wants to use the word nigger. Hey, why can't he do that? Why can't we do it? Blah, 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 blah. Oh, wait, let's take down the flag. Why do you want the flag now? Oh, it's all part of their tactic. This is what they do. It's not out of complete fortitude. Okay, these people, it's an organized, a well-oiled machine. That's how you have to look at it. White supremacy is a well-oiled machine that has been present in this country for centuries. Okay, Dylann Roof didn't walk into that church, you know, with just, you know, a spur of the moment feeling to go kill people. He had 329 years of oppression backing him up, telling him that what he's about to do is the right thing, because they've done it. They've done it over and over and over. And it's always been okay, because nobody has been willing to talk about it. That's why they do it. They do it because it's okay. It's been okay. Okay, when they were hanging niggas from the trees and burning them and having their wives and kids to come out and watch it was okay. They didn't go back and say, hey, man, that's kind of mutton fucked up, and we just burned somebody alive. It was just another nigga. We just get another one tomorrow morning.
Well, they're still hanging niggas from trees. There was a lynching not too long ago. Two of them in the South and one in Louisiana, where they said that the mentally challenged young man who wandered away from his uncle,
walked into a noose and hung himself.
And hung himself in an area that he didn't know, and just decided to find a rope and hang himself.
I mean, you look at it. It's so blatant. You know, you see it. You see it in police reports. You see it in police encounters. Whenever we come into contact with cops. The stories are just so fucking flabbergasting that you have to be some kind of superhuman to do the thing they say you did. You know, like you were arrested and handcuffed behind your back, and somehow you became a contortionist and pulled out of your fucking handcuff and decided that day, after having been on earth for so many years, to take your own life, to kill yourself. Because they arrested you with a blunt. I mean, seriously. There's so many stories. And it's always the same shit. You know, the suspect just appeared to commit suicide. He committed suicide in the back of a truck. You know, he found a gun on himself and decided it was time to go. You know, and they believe it. They believe it. This is the reason why they fight so viciously when we start challenging them. You know, because they want to believe, they want to accept whatever the police tell them. That's the agreement. The guy did it. I mean, here's a young man who was arrested for something he was never convicted of, sent to jail for 3 years without a trial. He was raped. I mean, I watched the video, bro. I watched the video of this man being beaten by other inmates. In jail with fucking correctional officers standing by and looking at him and letting these jokers, they stomped on him repeatedly. And when he was finally released after his case started making news, he couldn't come to terms with life. He killed himself, you know. He tried to commit suicide 3 times.
Yeah.
He finally did it. Just earlier this month, he finally got it. I was, my heart was broken, man. But guess what? When you put a story like that, the black Republicans, the black conservatives, guess what they say? Well, he shouldn't have did anything to get in there in the first place. You know, he should have just know, being okay. I mean, if you wouldn't have fucked up, you wouldn't have been in jail to begin with.
Well, I got a story right now that just came through the wire, and this is coming out of the Pakistan news. Okay. Innocent New Yorker gets $6.25 million for 25 years in jail. Yes, he's a brother. Jonathan Fleming, 53, walked free in April 2014 after his conviction was overturned by the Brooklyn District Attorney. He had been found guilty of the August 1989 shooting of a drug trafficker despite being with his family in Orlando, Florida at the time of the murder.
I remember seeing that. Yeah, I remember that story. I saw it on the news not too long ago in 2014 when they were letting him out. And that's the fucking thing. And he had plane ticket. He went to Disneyland with his family. This is what I'm talking about. This is what they don't want to talk about. This is exactly what they don't want to talk about. I saw that story. He showed them tickets. That he went to Disney World with his family.
It's not good enough.
And then it wasn't good enough. I mean, I was reading this morning. I was reading the story about this fucking guy, this Dylan Roof, and it's from Reuters, and it's titled "Why the South Carolina Shooting Suspect Should Not Be Called a Terrorist." And listen to this. This is absolutely mind-blowing. Was the massacre of 9 people at the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, an act of terrorism? Almost certainly, yes. Does this mean that we should be calling the suspect Dylan Roof a terrorist and prosecuting him as one? Probably not. What the fuck does that mean, bro?
Newspeak.
I mean, you're asking, you tell us that it should be, it is an act of terrorism, but we can't call the man who committed the act a terrorist?
Hey, I can't remember his name because we got into it on Twitter. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at The Angry Indian on Twitter. I can't remember his name. But if you go on my timeline, ladies and gentlemen, you'll find my little go back and forth with the author of the piece in the Washington Post that why we shouldn't be calling Dylan Roof a terrorist. And he told me that he did call it terrorism. That was his comeback. And yes, if you read the text, he does say this as you read in the piece that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes, it's terrorism, but we shouldn't call it that.
Yeah,
well, what it is newspeak. And for those of you who are into French philosophy like myself, many of you know from my writings that I'm a fan of Jacques Derrida, and I considered many of my pieces to be structural, analysis in terms of deconstruction, as well as indigenismo. And, as a lay student of Derrida, you have to read into the text. Because if you say, well, it's terrorism, and then you can go on down in the rest of the text and start explaining why it isn't. But when you get criticized for it, you can say, but I did say it was terrorism. You totally confuse the argument.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, that's why when you ask almost any conservative, I don't care if they're, when I say conservative, I'm talking about even conservative progressives and liberals, many of them. I'm a conservative indigenous person. Yeah, and I'm saying I stick by what the fuck things are supposed to be about. If the book says everybody has the same rights, then fuck it, that's it. Everybody has the same right. That's the conservative view. See, the liberal view is, well, let's just keep fucking with this and change it the way we see fit at the detriment of other people. Now, right. That's where, in technical terms, the language is right. But the term liberal in this country has a completely fucked up meaning, just as conservatism does. You can't have a real conversation about politics in the United States because there's too much fucking ignorance around the language.
Way too much.
Well, you're bilingual. You're fluent in French and English. But see, that gives you a jump on most goddamn people because you actually understand the words that you're using. See, you know, when I say that I'm a conservative to a lot of motherfuckers, especially the American Republicans, they don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. They're totally confused. And they got me, you know, wrapped up in some kind of fantasy that they have about liberals and shit. And I'm like, why don't you read what the fuck I actually write? There's nothing liberal about what I'm writing. I'm saying stand by the motherfucking law. Now, what you're saying is you talk about the Constitution, but when the Constitution says, well, all men are created equal, all of a sudden, black people don't count.
They don't count.
You know,
they don't count.
Indian people don't count.
No.
Spanish-speaking Indian people don't count. Asians don't count. Women only count when they're white women and you put them on a pedestal, but you really don't fucking like them or respect them. You treat them like goddamn shit, but you use them as an excuse to come after fucking black people. Because let's talk about this. What was the first goddamn thing Dylann Roof said as he was standing over somebody reloading? Either the first time, the second time, the third time, the fourth time, or the fifth time he reloaded. He said, you are taking all of the women.
You're raping our women.
And you're taking our country. But he talked about the fact that you're taking our women. And then we find out from his cousin, who says that there was a girl that he fancied.
Yeah.
And a brother snagged her instead. She went with the brother. And after that, he went over the fucking edge.
So that's what motivated him.
Well, no. It was already there.
That was his tipping point.
That was the tipping point because he now could not have control. And a lot of white women have pointed this out, that he couldn't control the woman that he was interested in.
Yeah.
And when she left, when she wasn't really his any goddamn way, and the brothers out there who consider them pimps, and there's a handful of you who listen to this fucking show, you know what I'm talking about. And I'm going to use some raw street language right now, not to insult our sisters that listen to this show, but bitches come leaving. You can't keep any goddamn buddy. That's why the real professional fucking pimp, you're talking about a pimp was using, I'm not talking about somebody who's with his girl or maybe got a small family and they're out here trying to make a come up. I'm talking about somebody who's running employees. You can't make anybody fucking stay with you. So yeah, you got your gorilla pimps and shit. You got your motherfucking guys to put their girls on dope and shit. Yeah, they burn them out to their boat, broke busted and can't do a goddamn thing. Okay, yeah, that's out there. And yeah, there's extremes to every motherfucking thing. And I'm not condoning pimping. Let's not motherfucking go there. But let's just fucking talk about this shit in real motherfucking facts. You can't keep no goddamn buddy. You can't make any fucking buddy want to be with you. So if you got motherfucker out here running game, you dig what I'm saying? He'll fucking tell you. You have to convince her to be with you. You can't make her go out there and sell her ass and then give you the fucking money and think she's just going to be okay with that shit. You got to fucking pull that shit on her. You got to do a mind goddamn game, all right? And see, motherfuckers out here pushing the pimp meme in rap music, in this and that, is entered the fucking mainstream. Pimp my ride. Pimp my house. Pimp my watch, right? All this bullshit. We don't realize what the fuck these things are really getting down to. And motherfuckers want to talk about pimping all the fucking time. But let's really get down to it then. Man and woman, let's get down to that bullshit. This motherfucker felt that he owned her. Because he liked her. And felt that because he was a white man in America, she belonged to him. And when this black man came around, and I'm sure this used game. Okay? And I know it bothers a lot of white men. I've had a few of my white friends get drunk and say to me that they don't understand. What is it about black men? I don't understand it. My wife always talks about Tay Diggs. She's always talking about some brother that she just saw on the TV show who's got a good body, whatever. What's going on with this? This is what was running through Dylann Roof's fucking mind. The idea that he owned this white woman and this nigga came and motherfucking took her and started with, you rape all women. Now, where am I going with this, brothers and sisters? Where am I going with this? Because you got a lot of fucking people on social media and the Conservative Citizens Council that influenced this goddamn Dylann Roof, okay? Who are out here pushing a meme that white women are being attacked at a rate of 1,000 a fucking day by black men. And he believed this. Because the point was, he didn't just come out of it all of a sudden. He didn't get this girl and lost his fucking mind. He grew up in the fucking South, people. Let's get real.
And he motherfucking has been growing up hearing this shit. White women don't choose to be with black men. They're being raped. This is the meme that's being pushed and has been pushed since the fucking 50s. There's nothing new about this.
Nothing.
If you read the literature out here on what they call, which is complete bullshit, cultural Marxism. And if you look on Twitter for the hashtag mugshot. And like I said, these are the people on black Twitter that I have done battle with. And motherfucking, you look at their goddamn literature. You need to read white supremacist websites. NewSaxon.org, Stormfront. You need to read their fucking literature. They are out here telling each other in their little fucking circles that black men, there is no such thing as interracial marriage, interracial love, none of that. That all of it is about rape.
Right.
And this is why I brought up the pimping thing, because that leads into the whole porn industry. Now, I know a couple of my listeners that I know personally are really into Wesley Pipes. Now, I'm not knocking Wesley Pipes. We've talked about him on the show. He says that he's a thug, and that's all there is to it. So I take him at his word. He is what he is. But let's talk about the films that he does. You see one little waifish-looking white woman in the middle of all these thugged-out, cock people, tattooed motherfuckers, some of them with stab wounds and gunshot wounds and shit, right? And they're gangbanging this white chick. Now, we can sit here and talk about who's actually watching that porn and who isn't. It turns out you would think that L.A. maybe and, Philly, New York, Chicago, Newark and shit would be watching that kind of interracial porn. Nah, it turns out black people don't really, they fuck with porn because I suppose it's part of hip-hop culture. But black people don't really fuck with it that much. See, we actually get sex, I suppose, and we don't really fuck with it that much. Right, because you don't hear too many pimps and shit trying to get too many of their girls to go after black tricks because they can get laid. Ask a professional fucking pimp. They make their money from white people. You understand?
Right.
So when you look at the porn industry and you look at the interracial porn, there's been several reports done on this where you look at the credit card payment for who's buying this shit. It's in the South. It's in the red states. It's in South Carolina. It's all throughout the Bible Belt. They're buying all of this porn. This interracial porn. Where you have websites like niggerfucker.com, obamaporn.com, suckmyblackdick.com, junglelove.com, rapebyniggers.com. I've seen these handles. And they're all disgusting. I mean, this is an erotica. This is straight up pornography to the fucking extreme. And I went on a tangent with this, but I want that to be a part of this discussion, because when Dylan Wolf came in there, his sexual inferiority had a lot to do with this. The sexual inferiority of most white men. I have a book in my possession. I'm going to go on for just a moment more. I have a book in my possession. It's an old book. It's falling the fuck apart. But it's called Man's Dangerous Myth. Man's Most Dangerous Myth. It was written by a medical doctor in the South who said that it mentions in two different parts of the book where he mentions that his white patients would ask him how big the penises were of his black male patients. And he said that he would ask them why they asked him that. And he goes, oh, we all know niggas are hanging down to their knees. Everybody gonna keep on moving. This is a problem of white people. Racism is a problem all around the world. And I will never make the goddamn argument that the African does not practice racism on the continent of Africa. They certainly fucking do. Most certainly goddamn do. And the fucking the bias and the bigotry and the fucking hatred towards indigenous people in Africa is fucking real. And the more Arab blood you have in Africa, the easier your fucking life is. But we're talking about the world scale and about who has power and who really fucking doesn't and how this shit perpetuates. And one of the fucking things about the white man, when he went to Africa, he talked about the penis size of the fucking African man. And seems to have been on a fixation about this shit ever since. So, Brother Bunker, if you could, for your travels, your experience overseas, your experience in this country,
You are a brother who has it on point. You have your shit together. And when you, you know, when you are out here and you're in the world, man, you know, it's like, you know, what goes through your mind when you know that you're dealing with people that are not looking at you as a human being, but as a caricature?
I mean, the thing is, and I'll tell you one thing. Racism is not something that, you know, that's specific to the United States. As you were saying, I mean, it's all over the world. It's all over the world. And the more you travel, the more you experience it. Okay? I mean, not too long ago, we were seeing on TV how at a soccer game in Europe, you know, they booed certain black players. I mean, hell, I give you a name, Mario Balotelli.
Balotelli.
Who's the only black player that's ever played in the Italian Squadra Azzurra in national football team. He, for so many years, were booed out of the stadium repeatedly. Like, as soon as he'll come on, they'll start screaming, making all these monkey screams and, you know, and throwing bananas at him. Dude, he cried so many times. Okay? Because that's what it is. And it's, again, it's not something that you're born with. Racism, nobody is born racist. You know, it's like when you get into an argument with somebody on Twitter, they say, oh, you black people, all you do is complain about race. You're racist. You all are racist. Say, we aren't even capable of being racist. Because that with racism without power, it's pure prejudice. I can be prejudiced against you. I can not like you for the way you look or the way you talk. But there's nothing that is going to make me, I don't have the power to prevent you from having a job in my company because you're white. I don't have the power to send my police officers to target you specifically or those who look like you in the street, even if you're not doing anything wrong. I don't have that power because I have not established a system that actively hunted you down and diminished your humanity. I don't have that power. So when you say that I'm racist, you're pretty much saying that I'm prejudiced, that I might not like you because you're white. It's a possibility. But for most of us, we don't have that kind of hatred in us. I mean, I remember being in Milan and walked into a restaurant and these people, they wouldn't even serve me. You know, I remember having friends who went to Ukraine. Okay, they were beaten, severely beaten to the brink of death by Ukrainian students. Just because they walked into a bar and they happened to be talking at everybody else in there. Okay? And you have the entire Sudan, the country, just got divided into two because you got the Janjaweed militia and the black guy, the black side of Sudan, is being slaughtered by the Arab-looking ones. They're all from the same country. I mean, it's something that you learn. And my problem, and the reason why I'm so actively tweeting and talking about this stuff is because when you sit back and look at it, you see nothing but love from black people. We've given these people nothing but love the entire time. And you would, I mean, I have the entire series, of Keep Your Eyes on the Prize. I watch it religiously every now and then because it's such a poignant reminder of what we went through. And for example, when you talk about the Arkansas 7 who were kicked out of school, when you look at the footage, okay, when you look at the footage, you talking regular old white people who were ready to die simply because they didn't want these black kids going to their own school. That's it. Not because those black kids raped anyone, not because they stole anything, not simply because they were black and they were going to a white school. They stood up there and fought the police. I mean, I remember the story of it blows your mind. Medgar Evers. Okay? When you watch his story, here's a man who was walking into a university with a Supreme Court decision in hand that says that he can register at a school. But the governor of a state is standing in front of the door and telling them, you're not going to walk into this school. You are not going to register. That tells you how deep that hatred is. And this is what you're seeing today. Obama was saying that we can't possibly think that this just went away with all the civil rights movement and everything else. It just can't. It's impossible. Because when people hate with that much passion, it's passed on to generation. They pass it on to each other, to people that come after them. They make sure that feeling is perpetuated. And that's exactly what you're seeing today. It's just a different form. It's not as blatant as four white people grabbing Emmett Till and taking them out back, shooting them, hanging them, beating them, you know, and still getting away with it. They're not doing it as blatant as that. But it's in the form of the police arresting a black man without charging him of a crime and send him to jail for the next 3 years, or send him to jail for 20 years for a crime they know he didn't commit. It's in the form of a Dylan Roof who sees grievances on TV, grievances about a kid like Trayvon Martin who was gunned down by an overzealous prick and who didn't even go to jail, and he sees that and say, damn it, those black people, they complain, they're taking over our country, and I have to do something about it. That's what you're seeing. That's the same form of racism that you were seeing back in the 40s and the 50s. You know, and now what's even more depressing is you have to watch other black people, people that look just like you, embrace that kind of thought. And that, to me, is fucking mind-blowing. When I have to sit there and argue with another person that looks like me, I have to tell them that, do you really think it's okay for Tracy Martin and Sabrina Fulton to come home and find the kid? They can't find where their kid was because the police didn't even think Trayvon Martin's life was valuable enough for them to go door to door in that community and ask, do you guys know this kid? Does anybody know this dead kid? Nobody, it wasn't even a subject of discussion. I mean, everybody was just like, they agreed.
Operation has been completed.
They agreed with Zimmerman that he was the fucking thief. And he had shot a thief. And guess what? They go to trial. And they will always find a jury of their peers who will acquit them. Why? Because they live in that constant fear, the fear that they built up in their head and in their community that says that black are violent. Black people are violent. They're so violent, they're raping our women. They're taking our country. Why they don't call somebody like that a terrorist is beyond me. I can't understand it for the life of me. Because he is clearly not a lone wolf. Okay, when somebody has that much memorabilia online, he has that much information stockpiled somewhere that is showing you a clear pattern of him belonging to a bigger organization, a bigger science of thought. You have to do something about it. But guess what? They'll start talking about Obama using the word nigger. they'll start talking about taking down the flag, the Confederate flag. I mean, you're going to hear about it. I mean, if 9 white people were killed inside a church by a Muslim man who yelled Allahu Akbar, I guarantee you, we wouldn't stop hearing about it for the next year. It's going to be on the loop on Fox News for the next year, every single day. And that's what it's become. That's what it's become. And nobody wants to talk about it. And then when we have the courage to stand up and say something about it, we got other idiots who look just like us get up there and say, we complain. We complain too much. What do you guys want? You know?
Justice. The same thing you want. You know?
I mean, seriously.
Yeah, well, you know, Brother Bunker, I mean, as always, man, it's refreshing and definitely spoke for many in the, you know, in the black community in the United States on what it is that we're actually facing, the questions that we should be asking, the questions we should be asking ourselves in terms of, you know, are we going to sit and wait for the next Dylan Roof? Are we going to sit and wait for the next shooting like this of black people? Or are we going to try to figure out a way that we can actually get ourselves out of this situation and, you know, putting all reasonable options on the table? You know, hopefully reasonable people will be willing to do that. And actually, let me ask you real quickly before we really end this. Truth and Reconciliation Commission, for or against?
In the words of the great brother Malcolm X, these people aren't for us. They never were. Okay? Their system was never designed to protect us. Okay? Whatever we do, we can only try to exist among them. And one way or another, we're going to make sure we stay there. Okay? Because when you talk about reconciliation and you know, it's all good and well, but the reality is a lot of these people, they don't like us. They never did and never will. And there's nothing we can do about that. What we have to do is to make sure that our rights will be respected, that our lives will matter. That's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to continue to do. You know, I mean, when I'm sitting here and I'm reading a story about officers buying this terrorist Burger King, you know, right after they arrested him, you know, I'm just flabbergasted.
Yeah.
You know? They had the fucking courtesy to go out and get him something to eat after he just murdered 9 people. Their blood is still warm, you know, and they went and got him a nice little 20 piece. I mean, that's all we're talking about. You know, we can't fool ourselves and believe that there's going to be some kind of, you know, reconciliation or whatever. It's just not going to happen because these people aren't set up for that. That's not what they don't believe in that. They'll come and do something, you know, nice every now and then. And I believe there are nice people amongst them. There's no doubt in my mind. They're nice white people, and I know a lot of white friends that are outstanding people. They're outstanding human beings. They will believe. You know, but you know, it's a lot of these people. They have, you know, evil in them, and that's a problem. That's something you can't beat, bro. That's something you can't beat. But you have to make sure that they will respect our rights. They will respect our lives one way or another. They will. All right, because we're sick and tired of being sick and tired. That's just being straight up. You know. Every time, you know, something like this happens, you always hear these crackheads run out and talk about, why don't you talk about black-on-black crime? You guys kill. Well, I'll talk about black-on-black crime when you talk about white-on-white crime or Spanish-on-Spanish crime or whatever the fuck else crime you know, you want to talk about. I talk about that when you talk about those things too.
But well, the FBI says that white on white crime is out of control.
It actually is. I mean, 87% of whites are killed by other whites. I mean, we're not going into the neighborhood murdering them. And they're, you know, five times more white people in America than black people. So pretty much it's got to be a concern when, you know, almost 90% of your own kind is being killed by, you know, people that look like you. So you have to do something about that. The minute you do something about that, we're going to do something about ourselves. So until then, you know, shut the fuck up and just respect our rights. That's all we're asking for. You know, I mean, I had one of these idiots, you know, the what they call themselves, black conservatives. I had them ask me, you know, what do you guys really want? What do you really, what is the problem? I said, we just want justice. That's all. That's all. I don't need your money. I don't need anything. I just want justice. I just want to know that when the law says that we're equal, you know, under the law, that we actually are, that we're afforded the same rights, you know, that you know, we're given our day in court when we're caught doing something wrong, just like the rest of y'all. That's it. I don't want nothing else. I don't want your money. I pay my taxes just like you do yours. So you're no bigger American than me. All right. So yeah, bro, man, it was great talking to you as always, man.
Yeah, I like having you on, man. Yeah, when you're not talking about sports, you know, because I'm not into sports, but you know, I pay attention to, you know, the other stuff you rap about, man.
Yeah, man.
And you know, I'm glad that, you know, as I said, you know, you're a capitalist, but you got your head on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely.
You got so many cats, man. You know, all they see is the money.
I had to get on one of those other guys. And then you have those other guys, the new black, that I call them, the new guys. I mean, they get into a little bit of, you know, getting money and getting rich and whatnot. And whenever something happens, something tragic happens, they're like, oh, there you go again. You guys are complaining. Oh, God, let's just all get money. Just own the system. Don't just talk about... I said, you shut the fuck up. These people are talking about taking away your fucking rights. So whatever money you think about getting, you ain't going to get a goddamn thing if they have it their way. So either you're going to try to get with the movement or you stay there in your fucking hole and continue to think, yeah, you're actually doing something good. What good is your money if you can't spend it?
Yeah, but what they're chasing is the white ghost.
That's what it is.
It's not the money.
I told the guy, if you have no basic human rights, your money is worthless.
Ask Sidney Poitier.
Yeah.
You know, who was one of the most downest brothers in the acting industry. Never took a demeaning role.
Yeah.
Never once took a demeaning role. Oh, well, he's married to a white woman. So what?
Right.
What the fuck does that have to do with anything? I mean, Sergeant James Brown, the brother who was murdered, they said he died for natural causes in Texas. Turned himself in for a DUI, supposed to do 2 days. They turned it into 7 days when he got there.
Did you watch that video?
Yeah. I watched it on democracynow.org. And, you know, there were brothers talking about, oh, well, his wife was white. And it's like, what the fuck did that have to do with anything?
Man, I don't know, man. It's cool, man. I saw that video, bro. I saw that video. You're talking about a man who gave his life for this country. And came home to be treated the way they treat. He died in their hands, bro. He died like a fucking dog, bro. That shit was fucking infuriating. I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me, yo.
Yo, there's other cases like that you can go on YouTube. There was a minister, a pastor. He died like that. Can't remember his name just now, but they tased him like 16 times or something, and he died on film, you know? And just like James Brown, he died on film. Like that brother, when you go on YouTube, brothers and sisters, and please, I'm very embarrassed that I don't want to throw out the wrong name, but he suffocated in the back of a police vehicle. They didn't believe that he couldn't breathe. And you see him dying on film.
I saw that too. I saw it a couple of days ago. And you can see them. It was in Louisiana, right?
I mean, so.
you see at least 9 cops, and this dude is tearing this guy for like a minute straight. They electrocuted him. That's what they did. They electrocuted him. You can see the guy repeatedly tasing him. Tasing him for like a minute straight, and then stop, and then goes back again. I'm like, what?
Well, there was a Mexican brother. He was killed by the Border Patrol in Texas. They beat him to death, and this was caught on film. He was begging for his life. They kicked and beat him to death, and nothing happened. Absolutely nothing happened. There was another man. A mother and daughter were having an argument, a disagreement. This was in California, and the husband was black. And when he tried to, you know, get them to chill out and just get in the car and go home, you know, the cops showed up.
And got him.
They killed him right on the spot in front of his family.
Yep.
Right on the spot in front of his family. So, you know, it's like no matter what we say here, you know, the people are going to, you know, articulate it however they choose to articulate it. Their brothers and sisters are going to hear this show and they're going to say, yeah, you know, that sounds like what I say around the dinner table. And there's going to be the John McWaters. There's going to be the black Republicans and what have you. There's going to be the Larry Elders. They're going to sit here and the Ben Carson, you know, who are going to say that we're just angry for no reason, that we're looking for a handout, that we're making excuses for our own failure and so on. But then we look at Darren, you know, I mean, I keep saying Darren, Dylan Roof, who was a complete fucking failure. Like this Jim Boulware, who went and shot up the Dallas police station. But they talked to him. They brought in 2 different negotiators to talk to him. And they were finally forced to kill him at the end of that siege.
Yeah.
But they, you know, they still haven't called him a terrorist.
No, not at all.
Not at all, right? You know, even though his father is blaming liberals for what he did, which is totally ludicrous.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how they could blame the Democratic Party or progressives or what have you for what this man got up and chose to do. He made a decision to go and do this. And obviously he wasn't wrapped too tight, but the bottom line is he was a white man. He went and did a terrorist act, but they're not calling it terrorism. Dylan Roof is a terrorist, but they're not calling it terrorism. A black guy who may be gay and again not wrapped too tight decides to go to the Family Research Council and shoots up a bunch of people, shoots somebody in the arm with a bunch of chicken sandwiches. He's a terrorist. Entertainer like P. Diddy, who, I'm not saying this to insult the man one way or the other. I don't give a fuck about it. He's out here doing what he's doing and not really involving himself in the political scheme of what's happening out here in the real fucking world. All right? I don't give a fuck about him. But the idea of charging this particular black man with a terrorist threat, when you have somebody who killed 9 goddamn people in a church who was trying to start a race war and kills a fucking state senator, no. You know, Brother Bunker and I, we're not with you. See, we know what terrorism is. And Brother Bunker started off correctly by reading from the FBI's own fucking website on their definition on what terrorism is. So let there be no mistake. We know what the fuck we're talking about. And this isn't emotional. This is analysis. Because this is something that we live with every day. And, you know, if he had enough common sense and intelligence as an Asiatic civilized black man to go to the fucking website of the FBI to check on their definition before he opened his mouth, there's nothing stopping the white supremacists who are out here twisting this story every different fucking way possible to make it out that what happened in Charleston, South Carolina to the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the spiritual home of the Gullah people in this country, to say that that is not terrorism, is it insult to you? Is it insult to Brother Bunker? Is it insult to me? And is it insult to common sense?
All right, man. It's always nice talking to you, bro.
All right, man. Well, look, I see you on the Twitters.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Take it easy, man.
All right, peace.
All right, no doubt.
You've been listening to Gervais Bunker on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please, stay tuned.
Voices Indigenous Radio brings to you the basics of how not to violate the law and presents the people who are fighting the war against Mother Earth. We bring the awareness of a different paradigm to the airwaves of WBAI as we shed the same old systematic paradigm that is killing Mother Earth. And you can hear the perspective of Indigenous peoples throughout the world and how they live with the law, land, air, and water. First Voices Indigenous Radio is produced in the studios of WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming and archived on WBAI.org and FirstVoicesIndigenousRadio.org.
दोपहर को कहाँ गई थी?
दोपहर को बाजार गई थी।
बता के नहीं जा सकती थी?
अरे अब इसकी क्या बताना?
पड़ोसियों से पता चलता है मुझे।
पता चले तो क्या हुआ?
चुप! ये घर मैं चलाता हूँ। मुझसे पूछे बगैर कोई काम नहीं होगा इस घर में। धर्मशाला समझ।
घरेलू हिंसा में बाधा डालकर उसे रोको। बेल बजाओ। घरेलू हिंसा अधिनियम पर जानकारी के लिए bellbajao.org पर लॉग ऑन करें। ब्रेक थ्रू की पहल।
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying, for Men in Hip Hop. Really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable, you know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It should be supported, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her, and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
Go ahead, ready?
I'm Forrest Whitaker for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and this is my daughter, True.
Hi.
Life is full of choices, and many years ago, I chose to become a vegetarian, and it's one of the best choices I've ever made. And since True's dad was a vegetarian, she decided to be vegetarian, too. You may decide to go vegetarian for better health, for a better environment, or you could be like True and I and just decide you don't want to eat meat anymore.
I love animals, and I love being a vegetarian.
I'm Forrest Whitaker.
And I'm True Whitaker, and we're vegetarians.
For more information, visit PETA.org.
God, I don't like a Negro like that. Here, the man not only throw his reverend in front of the bus, anybody who's standing up for justice. Did you hear him speak out against Sean Bell being attacked? Have you heard him speak about that injustice? No, he tried to carefully cage a speech and make it seem like he's such a great orator. Oh, brothers and sisters, he is a good orator. I'm not going to knock that. But I'm saying to you, I don't like scared to death Negroes. That's my position on Barack Obama. If the man had any gumption, he would stand up and tell the media. That's my reverend. That's my pastor. He has a right to say whatever he has. I have a right to disagree with him, not strongly condemn him for these bastards. This media, this same media who wants to tell you who the heroes are, they want to prop them up and then knock them down. You listen to these Negroes. You see what happened with Roger Clemens. That was their all-American individuals who are all done all sorts of strong. Brothers and sisters, again, let us be men. Let us be wise. Look at what happened to Sean Bell. Sean Bell murdered in November of 2006. Over 50 shots rang into this man as he was just celebrating the morning of his wedding with his two of his friends. No weapons. But just as they didn't find any weapons of mass destruction, and you can't count the shots that have went over to Afghanistan, the shots that's went over in Iraq, the shots that's around the world, that you cannot count how many shots have been fired. But we can count 50 shots that went into an unarmed individuals who they thought had weapons of mass destruction. They have yet to apologize. I know one of the brothers said that he was sorry and he apologized, but wanted to shoot 31 times. And the arrogance to thank the judge, to thank everybody, the police union. He thanks everybody, brothers and sisters, I'm telling you. Ku Klux Klansmen, we have no justice, brothers and sisters. You can protest all you want. And I'm saying to you, you're saying that we won't be violent. We're not going to be violent. We're going to prove prove that we're not violent. We're going to show that we can rise above this. We see Reverend Sharpton with the family going around trying to say that we're not going to create any civil disobedience or cause any havoc, but we got to have a right to express our views. Brothers and sisters, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, that's why you don't want to accept Muhammad. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said you can't fathom the depth of this devil. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad told you who the enemy was, but you want to make mockery of a man can't be a devil. Only a devil would shoot 50 bullets at unarmed people. Only a devil would go into a country and then hang the man and say he had weapons of mass destruction, set up a mock trial, and didn't have the man hung. Only a devil would do these things, but you and I want to say that, come on, America is changing. You got a Texas oil man, a former oil man who's in charge of the government, who's the president of the United States, and you're wondering why gas prices are $4 now. Brothers and sisters, we are being tricked, but you don't want no one to speak this truth because that's divisive. Oh, brothers and sisters, let us wake up, brothers and sisters. I thank Allah over and over again for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I love the Honorable Elijah Muhammad because he taught us the truth. He said, defend truth at any cost. Stand up and be a man. Brother said, stand up for something or you'll fall for anything. Brothers and sisters, just because somebody stands up and he has black skin, and you know, we threw behind Reverend Jesse Jackson, huh? We had, every time a black man stands up, they want him to condemn and to denounce Reverend Minister Louis Farrakhan. This is what you say, you got to denounce the Reverend. That's what Reverend Jesse Jackson had to do. You know, he apologized because they said he said that New York was Hamitown. Then they still call him anti-Semitic. Minister Farr, no matter what, he took the flight to Syria and got back Lieutenant Robert Goodman out there in January of... was it 84, I believe. Whatever he did of good, it doesn't matter. No matter what Reverend Sharpton does of good, it don't matter, brothers and sisters. They have put this jacket on you. And no matter what, Reverend Wright said it happened 20 years ago. Actually, it was June the 24th of 1984. 24 years, brothers and sisters. 24 years ago, and I recorded the speech live. They said that he said that Judaism was a gutter religion, that he said anti-Semitic remarks. He never said the word Judaism in the whole entire speech. Brothers and sisters, but it doesn't matter to you. Why let the story, a good story, get in the way of the truth, brothers and sisters, or let the truth get in the way of a good story?
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
It's our news flash.
Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
So at this point, we have nine victims.